Hello everyone, welcome to JTalk Extra Time, all the latest J2 and J3 news coming your way as usual. I'm John Steele and I'm joined by my co-host to help me with all the J2 news in this section by James Taylor, Kanazawa Dreaming on Twitter. James, how's it going?
Hi John, I'm alright, thanks. This is my first time as the guest this season and I'm mindful of the fact that we've had some really, really good analysis from the guests so far, so I'm a little bit nervous actually.
No, I don't think there's any need to worry, James. You're always welcome, and I know you've had your company mandated health check this morning, I believe. You have actually passed an actual fitness test to be on, which is something we sometimes use as a lame gag when someone's tired or hungover and might not appear. So I think you're all good. Don't worry. Anyway, James, without further ado, we are just about recovered from the Golden Week deluge of J2 matches. So we're going to talk a little bit about round 15, the games that took place in J2 over last Sunday. Strange weekend in a couple of different ways, I thought. James, you know, maybe it's because it was kind of the last game of a very busy, hectic fortnight. One game was postponed, which I'll talk about later, and there were 3 nil-nil draws across the 10 games that did go ahead. Pretty rare. I think players just maybe tired after playing, you know, 4 or 5 games in 2 weeks. However, there was an absolutely classic match at the Big Swan in Niigata, we'll talk about in a moment, and I had to double check. Apparently Kanazawa won a home game. So yes. That's where you're gonna come into your own in that segment, I think. And just before we get to the action on the pitch, James, we should mention the league table at the moment is just so tight, isn't it? I think Jeff Chiba in 17th, up to Tokyo Verde in 6th, only 3 points separating them. And I think there's 6 teams on 20 points. In the table. Kanazawa are one of those, so we'll talk about them in a moment. But all still to play for with a third of the season gone. But there's only one place we can start, James. I think Niigata 4, Tokyo Verde 3 was an absolutely classic encounter, wasn't it, on Sunday? And for the first time since pretty much the opening day of the season, we've got new leaders at the top in the form of Niigata. They're level on points with Sendai and Yokohama FC, the previous leaders at the summit, but they have a better goal difference than those two, so they're ranked first at the moment. And I'll round up Sendai and Yokohama's latest results later, but this game, James, was superb entertainment. Niigata 3-0 up at the break, Verde getting it back to 3-3, and then Niigata winning it at the death in the 88th minute. Now, Niigata stunned their visitors with 3 goals in the space of 8 minutes in the first half, with the winger on loan from Yokohama Marinos, Eitaro Matsuda, involved in all 3. In the 27th minute, Matsuda's low cross from the right was controlled and tucked away by the former Verde youth team graduate Yoshiaki Takagi for 1-0, a fourth goal of the season for him. Just 3 minutes later, Matsuda himself curled home a low effort from the edge of the box for 2-0. In the 35th minute, Matsuda's left wing cross was headed home emphatically by the big Niigata centre-back Michael James. And at this point, Verde looked like they were heading for another defeat like last season. Remember, they were beaten 7-0 at Niigata in 2021. But things changed quickly in the second half. Verde scored 3 times in the space of 15 minutes to tie things up. In the 50th minute, another wide attacker, this time Mizuki Arai, cut in from the left flank and sent a dipping shot over Ryosuke Kojima in the Niigata goal to make it 3-1. Very kind of unusual trajectory on this shot. I'm not sure, but I watched it a few times. I couldn't see if there was a deflection or not, but a great strike from a Verde point of view. It was almost 3-2 shortly after that, but Verde sub Byron Vasquez put the ball into the side netting from inside the penalty area. But Arai and Vasquez did combine to pull another goal back in the 58th minute. Arai's lovely flighted ball to the edge of the 6-yard box was volleyed into the roof of the net by the onrushing Vasquez. Really, really nice goal. And it was 3-3 in the 65th minute with Verde's young centre-back Seiya Baba playing an incisive through ball for Vasquez to latch onto and fire confidently past to Kojima. So 3-3, incredible stuff. And there was a final twist in the 88th minute when another substitute, Niigata's Ken Yamara, he'd only been on the field for about 2 minutes. He took aim from about 25 yards and lashed an unstoppable effort into the top corner to make it Niigata 4, Tokyo Verde 3. What a goal and what a game. Niigata now unbeaten in their last 8 games and looking like a pretty good bet for the top 6 after a third of the season's been played. Verde are still somehow in 6th place in the table despite only 1 win in their last 7 matches. We should say though it was a pretty good win against Sendai at the tail end of Golden Week. So, James, it was breathless stuff at the Big Swan. Niigata 4, Tokyo Verde 3. Can you make sense of this one at all?
You did very well summarizing that because there's a lot to get through. This was fantastic. As someone who doesn't support either of these teams, it was a really entertaining game. They both just attacked from the kickoff. There was very little in the way of defense from either team, which is a bit surprising from Niigata. I thought in a way this was a very Verdi-like performance. They do score a lot of goals, but they do also tend to concede in quick succession. So I wasn't surprised when they conceded one and then they conceded another. I was surprised that Niigata conceded 3 in quick succession because they don't tend to give up that many goals. They also don't tend to give up leads. And then I wasn't surprised that Niigata found a way to win because they have been doing that all season, really. The games I've seen them so far, they kind of dominate and they ramp up the intensity and they found a late winner, usually at 1-0 or 2-1, but 4-3 is pretty spectacular. And that the goal from Yamada was what a way to win, and for Verde, what a way to lose. I think that was a strange one in a way, because it seemed like he surprised everyone by shooting when he did. I think maybe everyone was expecting him to try and dribble a bit closer. But he got his shot off really quickly before anyone could close him down. Although, if defenders had tried to close him down, it might not have made any difference based on the defensive efforts earlier in the match. Because for each of the goals, I mean, for all of the first 6 goals, there was pretty poor defending, really. For the first Niigata goal, that Matsuda's cross was really good. It was a right wing overlap. They tried it a few times, and a really good touch from Takagi to take it away from the defender and give himself room to shoot. For the second goal, there were 3 defenders all running towards Matsuda on the edge of the area, and then they seemed completely flummoxed by the fact that he kicked the ball from his right foot to his left foot and then took a shot, as if they'd never seen anyone do that before. So I don't know what they've been doing. And then the third one, it was really easy for Matsuda to cross to Michael James, and the defender there, really pathetic effort to defend against him. There was no effort there at all, really. But what was strange with this was once they got to 3-0 down, Verdi seemed to really come into it. And I wonder if maybe it was because Niigata switched off, or they thought that it was going to be a cruise for the rest of the game. And then Mizuki Arai was really, really good on the left for Verdi. And I guess they made 4 subs at halftime, which probably helped change things up a bit, because, I mean, when you're 3-0 down, you've got to make changes, haven't you? And, Arai caused a lot of problems for the Niigata defence. And I was also impressed by Byron Vasquez. That's the first chance I've had to really watch him. I think he's had, was it four? It's 4 goals in 3 games now for him, which is pretty good. He was playing out on the right. I think from what I saw of this, his crossing needed a bit of work. Quite often, they're just blocked by the first man. But 2 really well taken goals. Again, though, the first one, he very easily got in front of his defender, who made no effort to go with him, or a cursory effort. And the second one, again, he did well to get behind the defence, but defence not paying attention to him at all, which is negligent. He's proven to be an inspired signing. He came from non-league, didn't he? He's jumped up 2 divisions. Yeah, he's still got to develop because he's, you know, still inexperienced at this level, I suppose. But yeah, really inspired signing. Although I'd argue that Verdi should have been more concerned with signing reliable defenders than with signing yet more goal scorers. What was also interesting was as Verdi were getting back into the game and they got back to 3-3, Niigata, when they were trying to attack, they reverted to that thing that they do where they try and do it as individuals, that one person will try and take on their man and go it alone. And they were really easily giving the ball away and inviting Verdi to attack them again. But once it got back to 3-3, Niigata seemed to calm down and start attacking properly and, you know, waiting for a support man to come and playing as an actual team, not just a bunch of individuals. And in that way, I think it was a very, Niigata-like performance. And they, as I said before, they found a way to win. What was also interesting about this one was there were 17,000 people there, which is a huge crowd for J2. And also following, there were 13,000 at Niigata on Wednesday. So they have had a pretty good week from, a ticket revenue point of view, which is good. But Verdi, so they're somehow still in sixth. I think they're a strange team. They're really entertaining. I think the international YouTube, J-League YouTube channel viewers are going to have a really entertaining month because Verdi are going to be on a lot. And if they keep playing like Verdi, then they're going to be really fun to watch. But frustrating for Verdi supporters, I think. But yeah, this I suppose progress. Like you said, this was 7-0 last year, so 7 goals, but 3 of them for Verdi. That is progress.
Yeah. I don't know how much consolation it is when you've lost 4-3 to an 88th minute winner to know that you've been involved in a cracking game and conceded, you know, 3 fewer goals than last season. I don't know how much that will placate Verdi Verdi players and supporters. But I think you did a really good job of actually analysing the game, James. I got the easy job of just reading out what had happened, fact based reporting. But you've done the actual digging into the analysis there, which is good. How much do you think, something we talked about a little bit before we started recording the show, just having, 5 games in about 2 weeks, in terms of the J2 schedule. I mean, there was a lot of ball watching in this game defensively, a lot of poor play, as you point out. I mean, it perhaps might be dangerous to kind of read too much into just one game when the players all look pretty knackered, right? Pretty tired.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think everyone's knackered. I saw it in the Kanazawa game that we'll talk about in a minute. And also actually in the Kanazawa game on Wednesday, away to Niigata, they look pretty tired. I think this is a pretty common thing. We saw it a lot in 2020, didn't we, when there were several runs of 5 games in quick succession. There are a lot of players just looked exhausted, and there was a lot more. They obviously had to rotate the squads a lot more then, and I think that's what we saw here. The players who hadn't had a chance to rest were just not doing things as well as they normally would. Yeah, Verdi's defence is a bit leaky, but it's not usually this bad, and Niigata's defence is very rarely this bad. So yeah, I think you're right. This was down to the schedule rather than the fact that these teams are bad defensively. I get that, Golden Week, there's lots of holidays, they want to have lots of football, it's a chance for that. But I also think it's not necessarily a good thing for the players to have to play so much in quick succession. And we've gone on a bit of a tangent. In British Rugby League, in the Super League, they always have this kind of thing at Easter. They have Good Friday and Easter Monday fixtures, which for playing a high contact sport like rugby league is really hard on the players. And then they play again the following weekend, and that third game the following weekend is always really, not always really, but it's often quite low quality because the players, they're all right to do Friday, Monday just about, but they don't have enough recovery time for the following week. And I think that is what happened in a lot of games this weekend in J2.
Yeah, it certainly was a bit of a strange one in terms of, like, you know, goal fest, you know, at Niigata, and then, you know, goalless draws, which are pretty rare, I think it's fair to say, this season in J2. To have three 0-0 draws, you know, on the same day was quite unusual. But yeah, all good points, and I think the analysis you've provided there is pretty good, James. Hopefully that's kind of settled your nerves now for the rest of the pod. But I think my gut feeling is, and again, I just talked about how dangerous it would be to extrapolate from the one game, but that's kind of what we're here to do. So I think Niigata, I'm expecting them to kind of hang around in the top six, actually, based on what I've seen so far. Not just this game, but the first sort of, you know, the season so far, the first sort of 15 games. Tokyo Verde, like you said, I'm not sure. They are clinging on to sixth place by their kind of fingernails right now, but I think, the defense was extra leaky on Sunday, but it's been pretty leaky all year. So I think even with all their kind of undoubted attacking prowess, it's hard to imagine them staying in that top six much longer. But Niigata are there, and they're top on goal difference. So I guess we should say fair play to them for the moment. We'll move on, James, if that's okay. This week we're just going to focus on one more of the round 15 games before we move on to a preview of round 16. But yeah, it's your wheelhouse, as I believe they say in the States, James. Kanazawa 1, Yamaguchi 0. Kanazawa, yeah, finally getting their first home win of the season, thanks to a 94th-minute goal from Ryuhei Oishi. As this game wore on, to me anyway, it became clear that one goal was probably going to be enough to win it, and it was nearly Yamaguchi who got that goal, wasn't it? Home goalkeeper Yuto Shirai made a couple of excellent one-handed saves in the last quarter to keep things at 0-0. And then pretty much all the drama came in second half stoppage time. First, Yamaguchi hit the crossbar through Hirofumi Watanabe's header from a corner, and then Shirai managed to drop on the ball and smother it to snuff out the danger. And then right at the death, Yamaguchi took a pretty tired-looking free kick, and it dropped to Oishi on the edge of his own penalty area. He brilliantly carried the ball up the pitch in a textbook counter-attacking move. This led to Kyohei Sugiura putting in a shot that Yamaguchi's normally very reliable goalkeeper Kenta Oseki, again, possibly a bit tired, he spilled it straight to Oishi, who'd continued his run into the penalty area, and he tucked away the loose ball for the vital goal. So yeah, finish Kanazawa 1, Yamaguchi 0. First win in four games for Kanazawa. It lifts them up to 12th in the table. Very pleasing record. 5 wins, 5 draws, 5 losses. And they're one of 6 teams, as mentioned earlier, on 20 points. And one of the other 6 teams in that group on 20 points is Yamaguchi. They also have the aesthetically pleasing 1-5, drawn 5, lost 5 record. Take it away, James. Kanazawa 1, Yamaguchi 0. You must be a cock-a-hoop.
Yeah, this is the first time I've been able to talk about Kanazawa win as a guest on the pod.
I'm just gonna fade you out. I'll just fade your voice out after about 45 minutes of this, I think.
Yeah, if I start singing the supporter songs, then you can cut at that point. I was very impressed with Yamaguchi, the way that they pressure the opposition so aggressively. They managed to regain possession quite high up the pitch several times. And I think they were very unlucky not to score. You mentioned they hit the bar. But earlier in the match, they had one, well, they had a shot from Takagi that was just wide. They had a header from a corner that Shirai had to, he was going moving to his left, but he had to dive back to his right and he stopped it on the line. There was one corner that he came for and missed, but fortunately Kazuya Onohara was there to clear it away as it was bouncing into the empty goal. There was another really good double save Shirai made. One shot, he dived to his left and the ball went straight to Takagi, but he couldn't get his feet on it properly. And it was kind of looping over Shirai as he was still down, but he managed to jump up and claw it away. And from the resulting corner, again, he had to make a fantastic sort of one-handed swipe to get rid of the ball. He was on fire. It was absolutely brilliant performance from Shirai. What was interesting about Yamaguchi was the way that they've got these really kind of solid centre backs, like Henan and Watabe, I think, who and then their wide men push up quite a lot because they're quite aggressive in trying to regain possession, but it leaves that space behind. And Kanazawa were able to exploit that fairly well, mostly attacking down the right with Riku Matsuda, the right back, and a little bit with whoever was on the right wing. Oh, I can't remember who it was. And Mori, it was Shinya Mori coming back from he was suspended the other day. And Matsuda put in a few really good crosses, just out of reach of sliding attackers in the middle. He also put in some terrible ones that were nowhere near anyone, but that almost worked for us. That getting behind the pushed up wide men, but yeah, it was a pretty good performance from Yamaguchi, and I think based on what I've seen of them from this match and the highlights of, you know, things like that when they beat Machida the other day, I think that they will probably finish comfortably in mid table. But for Kanazawa, yeah, really lucky. I think we were lucky to win. The goal was really good. That stoppage time, actually, the whole 4 minutes of that were really entertaining. There was the corner, they hit the crossbar, then Kanazawa went up the other end and Hayashi had a weak shot saved. And then Yamaguchi went down the other end, had a weak free kick. And then Oishi went up the other end and scored. It was really, really fun. It was fun because we won. I mean, it would have been rubbish if we lost. And but I think Oishi, I'm glad that he got a goal because he's impressed as a sub when he's come on in games this season. But he's not actually been able to affect the scoreboard until now. And I was pleased. Kyohei Sugiura is so cool and reliable under pressure. And what was interesting from that was Oishi made that run and he played a square pass to the right. And I was thinking, why is he passing it over there? Because he had players slightly ahead of him to the left or Hayashi in the middle. And so passing to the right. And then whoever it went to played a perfect one-touch pass for Sugiura to run onto. And it took me a couple of replays to realise that the person who played the pass to Sugiura was the centre-back, Daisuke Matsumoto, who... when he saw that Oishi got the ball on the edge of the area, he just thought, I'd better run, and ran up the pitch with him. And not usually that far up the pitch, but brilliant work from him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it was a really good win for Kanazawa, as you mentioned. Perhaps slightly fortunate, but there wasn't really anything fortunate about that breakaway. And we talked in the sort of Niigata Verdi chat about how players must be pretty tired, you know, after so many games in a week. I mean, I was never a professional footballer, James, you might be surprised here, but I think if I was in the same position, if I could just clear a 94th minute free kick, I think I would have just cleared it and then watched it sail, you know, yeah, into touch. I wouldn't have been busting a gut to get up to the other team's penalty area and try and win it. So I think Kanazawa deserve a lot of credit for not only executing a kind of classic smash and grab breakaway, but also just having the energy or the drive to actually do it, because a lot of players I would suggest would be like me and just trying to desperately clear their lines and just take the point, you know, and have a breather. So I thought it was a good win, and maybe again, you know, something about having so many games running together is we do get the occasional cameo from players that we don't talk about very much, like Ken Yamura, you know, getting the winner for Niigata, and Ryuhei Oishi here. I mean, he doesn't get a name check on the pod very often, I don't think. And I think Yuto Shirai, you know, a couple of years ago, he had a really great season, didn't he? And he was probably the top, or maybe one of the top keepers in the league, 2019, maybe 2020. Yeah. And then I don't know if he hasn't sort of been the first choice every year since then, but I thought he really showed he was kind of back to his best in this particular game. And I you know, his saves, as you highlighted, were pretty crucial, weren't they?
Yeah. It was 2019. He was just amazing. 2020, not so good. And 2021, he didn't play very much. It was Goto who was the starter, and obviously Goto's gone to Yamagata, and so Shirai's come back as number one, and he's been fantastic this year. He's played every game so far. I'm surprised at that. I was expecting to see Motoaki Miura, the backup, at some point, but we haven't seen him yet. I want to mention Kazuya Onohara. I mentioned him a little bit before. He's made mostly substitute appearances, and when he has come on, he's mostly been playing as a winger. But in this match he started, and he started as a centre midfielder with Keita Fujimura, and he played really well. I think he's a very understated kind of player, and he's a really hard worker, and I think I expect him to feature more as the season progresses, partly because of Well, injuries, Ohtani, Hayato Ohtani, I think he's going to be out for a while because he's got a knee injury. Hiroya Matsumoto, who was the first choice central midfield partner for Fujimura, he's injured as well. So I think, and also Toyota's not played for a few games. I guess he's injured or ill. So that means that we have to shuffle things around. So I expect to see more of Onohara, and I think he's going to do really well. And we talked about tiredness, and I think that actually that affected Dergen's tactics, because usually we tend to attack quite a lot down the left using Nagamine and Hiramatsu, but those two played a lot of minutes this season, and so this time we were going down the right through Matsuda and Mori. Mori hasn't played as much as the others, and Matsuda's played a lot, but Mori, he's been in and out of the team for various reasons. But what's interesting about him is that he's really versatile, and I think that's going to be a huge bonus with injuries and with fixture pileups and stuff, because he can play as a wing back on either side and he can play as a winger as well, and he was pretty good as a right winger here. Matsuda's quite versatile as well, so I think that's a positive development from this kind of busy period.
Well, it's nice to have such a positive chat about Kanazawa with you, James, because I think the last couple of times they've been the sort of featured game, or last season especially, it was definitely more a case of trying to get you off the topic as quickly as possible in case it depressed you any further. So just in general on these two sides, I mean, I mentioned that they got 20 points after 15 rounds, Kanazawa at 12th and Yamaguchi, very close by. I'm sure both sets of supporters must be pretty happy with how the first quarter of the season's gone. I mean, relegation worries do seem, not to tempt fate at all, but seem very distant, don't they? Is that fair, or is that too rosy a picture, do you think?
Well, after last year, I would never say never, but I think both of these teams will probably be fairly safe in mid-table. I think the way Yamaguchi play, they'll win as many as they lose with that kind of tactic. And so Kanazawa been really good away and really bad at home, but I suppose that maybe that'll switch around. Or I think they'll both be fairly comfortably mid-table teams. And one more thing, since you're a fully paid up member of the Shion Niwa fan club, I saw that I think he played in the training match on yesterday against Matsumoto, which is good, because he's been out injured since pre-season. So hopefully that means he's close to a return to the first team.
This is excellent news, James. The positives just stacking up here. For Kanazawa, and for me, I'll have to reactivate my Shion Niwa shrine. Change the light bulb and put up a few more posters. But I don't know. To be honest, it'll be interesting to see if he can actually play his way back in. Because I think up front, the guys that have been playing have done pretty well. And when the team is winning and doing okay, it's hard to justify making a change, isn't it? But I think obviously, if you ask Masaki Yanagishita, having a fully fit Shion Niwa available is definitely better than having him injured, isn't it? So hopefully he's back and banging soon. And not to jump too far ahead, but I had a quick look at the kind of fixture schedule for the second half of May and into June, and with the Emperor's Cup coming up as well, and midweek round or two sprinkled in, I'm sure it's going to be a case of all hands on deck for pretty much all the J2 teams yet again. So there's not much time to rest after the Golden Week holidays, and I think that goes for us as well, to be honest, and the podcast stakes. So okay, James, at this point, you've done a very respectable 15 minutes on Kanazawa there. I was fearing the worst, but you've done very well. We're going to take so just two featured games from us this week, James. We'll take a quick recording break here in a moment. I'll be back rounding up the rest of the round 15 action. And then James is going to join me again. We're going to look ahead to round 16 coming up this weekend. Welcome back, everyone. John Steele here again to round up all of the round 15 J2 action that I didn't talk about with James in part one. First of all, the Omiya against Iwate match, which was postponed after a cluster of COVID-19 cases at Iwate, has already been rearranged for next Wednesday, May the 18th, with a 7 p.m. kickoff at NAC 5. It's worth mentioning as well, Iwate's home game coming up this weekend against Yamagata, round 16, is also off because Iwate have to shut down club operations for 8 days as part of the COVID protocol. So Omiya against Iwate was off and it is coming up next midweek. As mentioned in part one, there are three teams tied together on 29 points at the top of the table. James and I have talked about Niigata already, but it's Sendai in second place now after they won 2-0 away at Nagasaki, with two former Nagasaki players getting the vital goals. In the 26th minute, Kamen Togashi headed the away side in front. Yasushi Endo's deep cross to the far post was headed back across goal by Yuto Uchida for Togashi to head in. Togashi got a boot in the face from the Nagasaki goalie Masaya Tomizawa while scoring the goal, but luckily he was okay and he could continue. Late on, Togashi should have made it 2-0, but blazed over after good work from Felipe Cardoso. But Sendai did add some gloss to the scoreline in the fourth minute of second half stoppage time. They did score a second goal, Ryoma Kida being sent clean through by Cardoso, and he sidestepped some pretty desperate Nagasaki challenges and then fired under Tomizawa to seal the win. So it finished Nagasaki 0, Sendai 2. Sendai starting to keep clean sheets now and are looking pretty good. Nagasaki still quite inconsistent. They're in 13th place. Former leaders Yokohama FC are suddenly third after losing for the second game in a row. They let in a late goal in a pretty uninspiring performance away at Akita, and 1-0 to Akita was the final score. Yokohama had a golden chance to go in front in the 70th minute of this game when young substitute Tomoki Kondo went clean through, but he shot too close to Akita keeper Yudai Tanaka and his effort was saved. The critical moment came 5 minutes from full time. Hayate Take, who was excellent all afternoon for Akita, sent a cross into the penalty area that caused havoc. Initially, Shuto Inaba's shot was blocked, but following up to score from close range was Daiki Kogure. So yeah, he scored and it finished Akita 1, Yokohama FC 0. Yokohama now haven't won in 6 matches, and their lead at the top, which they had built up, has vanished completely. Not sure where they go from here. It is a second straight win for Akita, though, and it moves them up to 15th place in the league table. 5 points behind the top three in fourth place are Okayama, but they lost for the first time in 8 matches in round 15. This was away at Jeff Chiba. The vital goal came right at the death from Issei Takahashi. He scored the winner for Jeff in the 94th minute. This game seemed to be heading for a 0-0 draw when Takahashi arrived on the penalty spot to sweep in Toshiyuki Takagi's low cross to delight the home fans at the Fukuda Denshi Arena. I should mention that before that, at the end of the first half, Jeff's keeper Shota Arai had made a pretty good save to keep out Okayama's Thiago Alves. But yeah, the final score was Jeff Chiba 1, Okayama 0. First win in 3 matches for Jeff, who remain disappointingly inconsistent, really, in 17th place. Switching gears now to the bottom of the table and the bottom side, Ryukyu finally picked up their second win of the season, winning 2-0 away at Kumamoto. I watched the highlights a couple of times and I'm still not sure how Kumamoto failed to win this game or even score a goal, because they had loads of chances, especially in the first hour, and particularly from Yusei Toshida, a young striker who was making his first start in the Kumamoto front line. Ryukyu didn't really have many chances until the 63rd minute when Koki Kiyotake rattled the post with a header, but they then scored twice in the space of 3 minutes to stun their hosts. In the 68th minute, Yuki Kusano scored for the fourth game in a row when he volleyed home a Kazuto Takezawa cross from about 6 yards. And then 3 minutes after that, a right-wing cross from Yuki Omoto wasn't dealt with really by the Kumamoto defence, and the ball bounced inside the 6-yard box and sat up nicely for Shinya Uehara to score with a bicycle kick. So it finished Kumamoto 0, Ryukyu 2, a great result for the Okinawan side. Ryukyu now just a point behind the second bottom side, and of course COVID hit at the moment Iwate. Kumamoto are pretty comfortable in 14th. The other four games from the weekend were all draws, including Yamagata 1, Oita 1 at the Endai Soft Stadium up in Yamagata. An amazing finish to this game, though, with both of the goals coming in second half stoppage time. Yamagata definitely had the better of the chances in this one, with Shun Takagi in the Oita goal, much the busier of the two goalkeepers. Yamagata thought they'd won it when they finally took the lead in the 93rd minute, when Thiago Alves latched onto Kota Yamada's chip ball into the penalty area, chested it down and showed dainty footwork to control and slip the ball past Takagi for 1-0. But at the very, very, very end, Oita centre-back Pereira rose highest to head in a Yuki Kobayashi cross to make it 1-1. That goal came in the 97th minute of the match. Wow. Yeah, and it finished Yamagata 1, Oita 1. So Yamagata stay fifth, seven games unbeaten, but their winning streak ends at four games with this draw. Oita are ninth, four games unbeaten for them, but three of those games have been draws. So I don't know, you could spin that stat either way. The other three stalemates in round 15, very unusually for J2, were all goalless. They all finished 0-0. So we'll start with Mito's home game against Machida. Machida, very much the better side here, but they just couldn't find a way through. Mito goalkeeper Luis Yamaguchi was in fine form and made some good saves. And Machida captain Taiki Hirato managed to hit the woodwork twice. He managed to hit the crossbar in the first half and then the post in the second. So it finished Mito 0, Machida 0. No wins in any of the last eight for Machida, although they played pretty well here. At the moment, they're 10th in the table. For Mito, it was a second clean sheet of the season after a long time of waiting, I suppose. And they're 18th in the table, 5 points clear of that relegation zone. Gunma's home game against Tokushima also finished 0-0. Gunma had the better chances overall, especially in the first half when they had the benefit of a very strong breeze behind them. Barrel-chested pod hero Towa Yamane hit the crossbar for Gunma early on with an effort that I think was probably a cross rather than a shot. It was caught by the wind and came back off the crossbar. Shortly after that, Tokushima's goalkeeper Suarez had to bail his team out when centre-back Kaka played a very ill-advised ball across his own penalty area straight to a Gunma striker, but Suarez was out quickly to make a good save. Suarez made another great flying save just before half-time, and the game was pretty quiet after that, although Tokushima could have won it with a chance they had in the last 5 minutes. Takashi Abe's header faded just wide of the far post following a corner, but it finished Gunma 0, Tokushima 0. No wins during Golden Week, no wins in any of the last five games for Gunma, who are 16th. Tokushima, just one defeat in six games for them, and they sit quite handily placed in 8th. Finally, it also finished 0-0 in the game between Tochigi and Kofu at the Kanseki Stadium. Tochigi came closest to scoring through young striker Ren Yamamoto, who managed to hit the base of the post in the first half and then had a shot cleared off the line in the second. Meanwhile, Tochigi keeper Shuhei Kawata made a really good one-handed save from Yoshiki Torikai to keep Kofu at bay, but it finished Tochigi 0, Kofu 0. Tochigi stay in 19th place, 8 games without a win, and pressure perhaps starting to build slightly on manager Yu Tokisaki. Kofu are in 7th, sort of pretty close to where you'd expect to find them in the table after 15 games, I think. Just one defeat in their last 7, so they're going pretty well at the moment. Alright, I think that's all the round 15 action cleared up, so please stay tuned. In a moment, I'll be back together with James. We're going to look ahead to the round 16 games coming up at the weekend. So stay tuned. Yeah, here come James and I. Welcome back, everyone. With all of the round 15 action taken care of by James and me, what we'll do now is look ahead to the action coming up this weekend, round 16. And the games are split fairly evenly, James, across Saturday and Sunday. On Saturday, May the 14th, as a reminder, the Iwate against Yamagata match is off already. That's because of the COVID-19 situation at Iwate. No new date yet for the rearranged game, I don't think. So the five games that will take place on Saturday, we have Kofu against Yamaguchi, Nagasaki hosting Omiya, Oita against Kumamoto, Not sure if that qualifies as a Kyushu derby. I haven't checked with Stuart on that, so we'll just say it's a two Kyushu teams, you know, locking horns. And at Tokyo Verde against Mito as well. I'm not sure if any of those games are particularly, you know, eye-catching, but I think the other game on the slate, Saturday night, 7 p.m., is a big one, isn't it, James? Ryukyu hosting Tochigi. Now, that's the bottom club hosting the 19th place side. But to add some flavour, Ryukyu won their last match away at Kumamoto, obviously, and they can close the gap on Tochigi to just 2 points if they win this game. And yeah, for some extra info, Tochigi really struggling at the minute, aren't they? No wins in any of their last eight. Did you think I'm right? That's the standout game from Saturday?
Yeah, I think so. That was the one that stood out for me. Ryukyu, they had a few draws over the Golden Week period, and then they finally managed to win. And it was a good win away at Kumamoto. They've not been so good at home. Well, they haven't really been good at home or away yet, Ryukyu. But yeah, this is a chance for them to drag Tochigi into trouble. So that one stood out for me. But I was also quite interested in Nagasaki against Omiya, because Nagasaki have been really inconsistent. And from reading Daniel's blog, quite lackluster at times. And I think they're on a win-loss schedule. Whereas Omiya, they've just had a week off. Well, not a week off, but they've had a rest because their match was postponed. So I wonder if they will come into this more fresh and still on a roll, because they had a few good results before that break, or if they will have lost that momentum that they'd built up because the game was postponed. So that'll be interesting, I think. And also, Kofu against Yamaguchi. I'm interested to see if Yamaguchi can bloody a few more noses. They beat Machida the other day, which was a really good result for them. They beat Verdi earlier in the season. So, yeah, I'd like to see how they get on against Kofu, who are a pretty good team, I think.
We talked a lot about Kanazawa, didn't we, in part one, but we should mention Yamaguchi had a much better than anticipated start to the season, I would suggest, and they've looked pretty good. So yes, and Kofu, tough nut to crack when they're playing at home, I think, but the way that Yamaguchi have started the season, I would give them a puncher's chance of getting a good result there. I think as well, just in terms of sheer entertainment, Tokyo Verde against Mito, you know, defending there is likely to be quite high up the pitch, shall we say? And possibly a few errors might creep in. I just wonder, is there a script written for you know, Boniface and Duca to perhaps either score the winner or drop a big clanger, you know, if he plays against his former club? I suppose we'll wait and see. He could do both. Yeah, you see, that's the X factor that he provides. Yeah, we'll see. Okay, I'll just leave that landmine there to be tripped over next week, I think. But James, on Sunday, May the 15th, what's become known as a J-League Day, you know, the official anniversary of the very first game in the J-League being played. The rest of the games are Machida against Niigata, so the current leaders going to the 10th place side. Sendai hosting Kanazawa, so second place against the away specialists, who are in 12th. We'll talk about that in a moment. Yokohama FC, erstwhile leaders, but struggling a bit at the moment. They're third at the moment. They host Tokushima, who are eighth. I suggest that's quite a dangerous game for Yokohama FC at the way they're playing right now. Okayama in fourth are hosting Gunma, who I was surprised to see are in 16th. I thought they were a bit higher than that. And then the last game on the slate, you know, football lovers only, perhaps a Jeff Chiba against Akita, exactly the kind of game that Jeff might lose a 1-0. You have to feel I'm being quite cheeky today. I don't know where that's come from, but I don't know. I wouldn't be surprised if Akita won that game somehow. James, where should we be looking on Sunday? Where's the action going to be?
I think Machida against Niigata looked interesting to me, because Machida haven't won since match day 7 and Niigata haven't lost since match day 7. So a nice bit of, is it symmetry or is it the opposite of symmetry? I don't know, it's late. Yokohama FC against Tokushima, well, that's a team that needs a win against a team that don't lose much. That could be, that'll probably be a draw because it's Tokushima. And Sendai against Kanazawa, of course I'm interested in that one. These teams have never played in the league. They've only actually ever played once. I looked it up on Transfermarkt, and it was in the Emperor's Cup in 2009, which Sendai won 1-0 after extra time. And like you said, Kanazawa are pretty good away so far this year. And Sendai, oh, they're second. So it's going to be interesting to see whether Kanazawa can come away with anything from there. So those ones stood out for me. Well, what about you?
No, I think that's all fair enough. I think Yokohama FC, I watched the second half of their game, the defeat to Akita on Sunday, and they looked, we talked about tiredness in the physical sense, I think, earlier on when we were reviewing some of the round 15 games. I think Yokohama just looked mentally quite tired. Obviously they blew up in the second half of their away game at Gunma, right? They were 3-0 up at half time and ended up 3-3, and they nearly lost the game. And they just, again, once they went behind very late on in this game against Akita, but you could just kind of feel the game sliding that way, and they didn't really seem able to stop that or affect the game in the way that they had done earlier in the season. So I actually think, I know on the face of it doesn't seem like a massive game, but I think if Tokushima win that one, and Yokohama go from being, I'm sure they were like 10 points clear, like before Golden Week, right at the top. They're going to end up, that would be three straight defeats if they lose that game, and they might be down in fourth or fifth, and suddenly that kind of bright start will seem like a long time ago. And then I think we'll learn a bit more about exactly what kind of character, what kind of a strength, that squad has mentally. So that's an interesting one. Sendai Kanazawa as well. I mean, Kanazawa are the away specialist, and I think Sendai are going well at the moment, but I think they can be got at. They're not invincible. They do ship quite a lot of goals, don't they? So there will be opportunities for Kanazawa, I think. The question might be whether they can take them, or whether that... I think Sendai, if we're being honest, they perhaps have a little bit of extra quality, don't they, with players like Endo, and Kamen Togashi is scoring with alarming regularity at the moment. So, I feel like it's a difficult game for Kanazawa, but not an impossible one. And I'm also interested in, Okayama Gunma. I mean, Okayama are starting to kind of very, under the radar a little bit. They're fourth. They've been going well. I know they lost at the weekend, but they've been good more often than not this season. And Gunma 16th, but I think they've been playing a bit better than that suggests. So I don't know if it would be a surprise if they got anything from that game necessarily, but I think that's two teams that I've been fairly impressed with this season. So I think them going head to head will be a good game as well. So basically, yeah, all the games is my answer. But I think if I had to pick one, I think maybe Yokohama against Tokushima, because I think if Tokushima can get the 3 points, then that will put Yokohama under some pressure that they just haven't been under all season so far. And I think that'd be an interesting narrative for the league as a whole, I think. All right, James, I think we've done a usual sterling job there, covering the two kind of major games from round 15 and a good look ahead to round 16. I think we'll leave it there for now. If you're happy, I know we could have talked about Kanazawa a bit more, but we'll save that for the maybe a Patreon exclusive, 3-hour charity live stream or something, I don't know. But thanks as always for joining me, James. I know it's a late night for you, and you're a busy man, so I appreciate it.
Well, thanks, son. It's nice to talk to another person instead of just talking into the microphone to myself.
Yeah, no, well, look, as a producer of several solo pods recently myself, I can very much relate to that. So it's good to be in the same virtual room together as another human for a bit. So yeah, thanks a lot, James, and hope you can enjoy the Kanazawa game at the weekend. Thanks as always for listening to the pod and downloading, and if you support the JTalk podcast on Patreon, we appreciate that as well. Please stay tuned. That's all from James and me, but in a moment you're going to hear Magic Mike Innes. He's got all the Emperor's Cup qualifying news from the weekend in the JTalk Short Corner segment, so stay tuned for that, and enjoy the weekend football. We'll talk to you soon. Bye for now. JTalk
Extra Time. Hello everyone, and welcome to JTalk Short Corner, the mini pod that keeps you up to date with events in J3 of the J-League. I'm your host, Mike Innes, and in this episode, I'll be looking back on J3 clubs' participation in local tournament finals as they seek to qualify for the Emperor's Cup, and previewing games coming up in round 9. First, an item of J3 news since the last pod. FC Gifu are the first club of the new season to replace their coach, Toshiya Miura having his contract cut short after only 7 games in charge, most recently the 4-3 loss at Fujieda MyFC. A record of 2 wins, 1 draw and 4 defeats, clearly not held to be a good enough return on the investment made over the winter to build a promotion-ready squad, as Gifu currently sit 14th in the standings, 10 points outside the promotion places. Miura has been replaced by his right-hand man Yuji Yokoyama, who has J3 coaching experience from AC Nagano Parseiro and Tochigi SC. Now on to the action, and over the weekend of the 7th and the 8th of May, there was a break in the league schedule, but some J3 clubs took part in the finals of local knockout tournaments, the winners of which go on to represent their home prefectures in the Emperor's Cup first round proper. There was one such game on Saturday the 7th in which Yuji Yokoyama's FC Gifu took on Gifu Kyoritsu University. Yokoyama gave first starts of the season to no fewer than 6 players, and 2 of them, Toma Murata and Ryohei Yoshihama, found the net. The other scorers were veterans Junya Tanaka and Tetsuya Funatsu, plus Kohei Hattori, making his first appearance in green since June last year. Final score, Gifu 5, Gifu Kyoritsu University 0. Then on Sunday the 8th, 2 finals sadly were cancelled rather than postponed, both due to a combination of COVID outbreaks and the difficulty in rescheduling games within the required timescales. Kamatamari Sanuki and Ehime FC have withdrawn. FC Imabari and Takematsu University receive a walkover to the Emperor's Cup first round. However, there were still 3 other finals in which pairs of J3 clubs matched up against each other. Exactly a week ahead of the long-awaited first J-League derby between Matsumoto Yamaga and AC Nagano Parseiro, Matsumoto claimed local bragging rights with a 1-0 win over their neighbours. The goal came in the 79th minute from 17-year-old substitute Sora Tanaka, who at the time was just 6 minutes into his first ever pro appearance. Pretty much a full-strength Parseiro side for this game, very much a second-string Yamaga. A 1-0 win meant Fukushima United gained at least some revenge for their midweek J3 defeat by rivals Iwaki FC. 19-year-old forward Shoki Nagano's first half goal, the difference between the teams, his second goal in 2 cup ties this season, a first win of the prefectural tournament for Fukushima in 6 years. Fujieda MyFC beat Ezel Claro Numazu also 1-0, Tomoyuki Doi netting with 6 minutes to go, 4 in the last 4 games in all competitions for Doi. Also on Sunday, Vanrari Hachinohe's Ryo Watanabe scored the only goal of the game in the 74th minute to help his side beat Reinmeer Aomori, but a couple of J3 teams did need extra time to see off lower-ranked opposition. Kagoshima United, performing well in the league, squeezed past the National Institute of Fitness and Sports in Kanoya, a brace from the unlikely source of reserve defender Shintaro Ihara, had Kagoshima at 2-2 at the end of 90 minutes. The more familiar figure of Rei Yonezawa netted in extra time to give Kagoshima a 3-2 win. Meanwhile, in the 113th minute, a header from substitute Luis Enrique, his first goal in Japan, meant it finished Katare Toyama 1, Toyama Shinjo Club 0. There were, however, defeats for Tegevajaro Miyazaki and SC Sagamihara. Miyazaki went down 2-1 after extra time to neighbours Honda Lock, Kenta Okuma's shot having put Tegavajano ahead late in the first half, but Locke pulled one back midway through the second half and netted the decider just 3 minutes from the end of the 2 hours. The loss was rather more clear-cut for Sagamihara, beaten 3-0 by Toin University of Yokohama, who therefore complete the double over their J3 neighbours, having eliminated YSCC Yokohama at the semi-final stage. So, with all the prefectural finals having been played and the qualification process complete, 10 J3 clubs have made it through to the Emperor's Cup first round. Let's spend a moment running through the relevant ties. On Saturday the 21st of May, Matsumoto Yamaga will play Hokuriku University. Fukushima United will play North Asia University. FC Imabari will play Okinawa SV. And FC Gifu will play Chukyo University. Then on Sunday the 22nd, there's a pair of all J3 ties. Kagoshima United against Giravansi Kita Kyushu and Katare Toyama against Fujiedama FC. There's also Gainane Tottori against Berespa Oita. And finally, Vanrare Hachinohe against Niigata University of Health and Welfare SC. Just time now for a quick look ahead to games coming up in J3 Round 9, with all 9 fixtures scheduled for Sunday the 15th of May. Interesting matches await each of the 3 joint leaders, Iwaki at home to suddenly inform Fujieda. For Matsumoto, there's that derby at Nagano. Kagoshima are looking at a tough trip to Imabari. Fourth-placed Fukushima will be hoping to put some points on the board as they go to Tottori. The spotlight falls back onto Gifu at home to surprise strugglers Sagamihara. Toyama play host to winless Wooden Spooners YSCC. Draw specialists Miyazaki will hope to do better at home to COVID-hit Senuki. Can upwardly mobile Numazu continue their trajectory via a home match with Ehime? And finally, Hachinohe need to start picking up points as they're visited by Kita Kyushu. With all the week's business seen to then, that's it for this mini-pod. All that remains is for me to say, thanks for listening, enjoy your football, and see you next time. Bye for now.